question and answer period. So please give a warm curb welcome to our panel. Thank you.
So just one clarification. Our company is actually Independent Data Management. MyAg Data is our product. No one knows us as Independent Data Management. But if you look us up, you can look us up either way. So I want to start, as every company should, with an advertisement. It's 2 minutes. It's a video. So if you guys could play the video, then I'll get into the slides.
Meet Joe. He's a farmer. Part of Joe's job is to grow things, but part of his job is to provide information to people too, like his banker and his crop insurance agent, and of course, the government. To do this, Joe fills out forms, lots of forms, but technology is about to make Joe's life a lot easier. See, Joe already collects much of the information he needs with the monitor in his tractor. The problem? Everyone Joe needs to share information with needs different pieces of information in different formats. There are different farm equipment manufacturers. There are different farm software packages, different crop insurance companies, different government reporting requirements, and none of them talk to each other. It's like they all speak a different language. Then came along a new service called MyAgData. MyAgData is acreage reporting made easy. It collects information from Joe's farm software and makes it talk to everyone else's systems. Makes it easier for Joe to share information with his crop insurance agent, his crop insurance company, and the government, all from the comfort of his tractor home or office. Joe's information is then stored safely on MyAgData's secure cloud-based system, so he can use it again for future reporting. MyAgData only shares the information required by the government, crop insurance companies, and agents Joe works with, and in the exact format they need. So Joe knows his information is always safe and secure, and will never be seen or used by third parties. Now, if you sell crop insurance, it might make you nervous that one of your competitors could offer this simplicity to their customers, and yours. The good news? You can use MyAgData too. MyAgData speaks everyone's language, giving you one system for all your reporting needs. So you can make it easier for Joe and any of your other clients to work with you. MyAgData really is acreage reporting made easy. Want to learn more? Visit MyAgData.com.
So that's who we are. Well, I'm actually not going to talk about us much at all. To sort of collaborate what's happening with data, I got permission to use the next three slides from the Ohio State University Department of Food, Agriculture, and Biological Engineering. They talk a lot about what's happening with data, and they're exploring various options for what happens to the producer data, where should it go, and how should it be maintained. So machine data, data collected by any type of machine in the field. It could be the monitor in the tractor. It could be the yield monitor in your combine. It could be a grain cart that's sitting in a field somewhere. It could be some handheld device with some app that somebody's got. But there's a lot of data out there. The first one is as-applied files. And I came from crop insurance, spent 3 years in an AIP, and left when I realized that I didn't know more about farm technology than I knew. Oh boy, I pushed the black button. So I left and started the company, and I had no idea what as-applied was 3 years ago. But as-applied is anything that's done on a field. So when you're talking in agriculture, you talk about, I'm not doing anything. I don't have it in my hand, it's going away, but I'll be okay if I just leave it on the table. So as applied is anything that happens on the field. If you're talking about crop insurance, you use as applied planting data to do acreage reporting. But you've got your spraying, your nitrogen application, your planting data. You've got yield data, you've got prescription files, and a prescription tells a tractor what to do in the field. And then you've got your fertility data. So right now, They've got a 0.5 kb per plant. So there is so much data that is out there as it relates to a plant, and it's only growing. Image data generation is where it's going to happen, and then we get 4.6. So we go from 0.5 to 4.6 kb per plant of image data, and the resolution is such that they can see a disease on a plant with sub-inch accuracy. So they can look at, if they choose to, every plant. I saw a demonstration in at the Farm Bureau conference on the count of tomato plants using a drone going over a field. And it's more accurate than probably a person walking counting plants because it doesn't make mistakes. It's the technology and how they apply the technology is going to generate a whole lot of data, which creates a number of issues and concerns. Well, okay. So privacy and security, number one issue for producers. Who has their data and what are they going to do with it? The second is it's all in different formats. So if I have a green tractor, it's in one format. If I have a green tractor that's 2 years old, it's in a different format. If I have a green tractor that's 5 years old, it's a different format yet. If on that green tractor I have a piece of precision planting monitor, it's going to be yet another set of data. So the data is called, it's on what's called the CAN format. So the CAN is the CAN bus, or the thing that stores all of the data. And on that CAN is everything from fuel consumption to alerts that are happening in the tractor, to every seed planted in the ground. I mean, everything is on that CAN. And that CAN is proprietary by manufacturers in the U.S. The CAN is actually standard in Europe and other countries because the U.S. is less progressive in the implementation of the ISO standards than the rest of the world is. But the data's in the CAN, and you can only get it if you can figure out what technology you need to be able to read it. And so producers don't want that data to get out. Manufacturers don't want that data to get out because pretty soon there's going to be, you know, the Kelley Blue Book that says that if you're in a hilly area and you've got this kind of tractor and you're planting with this kind of equipment, the fuel consumption is X on tractor one versus Y on tractor two. So there's a whole lot of proprietary information that's on the CAN that is there. And the next concern is the loss of control once the data is uploaded to the cloud. So, you know, one producer that that I've talked to a lot, he said, if there's ever a site that's mydata.gov, he's not putting his data there. It's like, give the government the data that they need to participate in the program, not everything else. And I would say the government understands they shouldn't get more than they need to, but that doesn't mean they don't want more. I mean, I was in a conversation recently about plant date. So everybody knows you've got your final plant date, and if I'm in southern Illinois and I'm planting soybeans, and I am planting them at 8 o'clock at night on July 15th, and July 15th is my final plant date, there are some agencies in the government, RMA not included, that want the time. And now they want the time in UTM, which is universal something time. It's basically 6 hours later. So if it's July 15th at 8 o'clock and they want it in UTM, the producer has to report July 16th at like 2 a.m. Well, there's not a producer that's going to report in UTM time. They want to report in local time, but the standards are all set in UTM time. So there's just a whole lot of question about what data should be reported to the government and how should it be reported and how does the producer make sure it's accurate. It was in another conversation and a producer said if their data goes on top of CRP or wetlands, they want to delete it. And there are people in the government agency that don't want the producer to be able to delete their data. And I'll show you an example in a minute. But there's just a whole lot of questions about data that others will talk about. And I would say the big one is they want to be able to share in the value of their data. They don't just want to be advertised to. They don't just want the manufacturers to increase or the capabilities of the tractor and charge them more money or change the genetics of the seed. It's a question of how does the producer benefit from others being able to use their data. So why should you care? I'm going to try to hold this without pressing this black button that I'm not supposed to press. So the big data impact first is farming practices are digitized. It's not just a farmer with a scrapbook identifying what fields they're going to plant corn and soybeans or other crops. Growers capture precise field boundaries. Lots of debate about the common land units or the CLUs. The CLUs are not precise. The difference between a CLU and the planted area is CLUs are drawn with a set of rules that are 3-meter accuracy based on an image. A person is looking at an image, and they're drawing lines based on the FSA rules. So they're drawing lines around trees, along waterways. The precision ag data is sub-inch accurate. So what's better for insurance purposes? Lines that are drawn by a human or sub-inch accuracy collected by the machine? The USDA is thinking about it. Brandon alluded to the accuracy pilot and the work that the FSA and the RMA are doing to allow the producer to report once and have that data used many times. But USDA programs can be, doesn't mean will be, they can be based on precise acres. Today it's very hard with the program rules across the FSA and the RMA to report accurately and not be penalized. That doesn't mean they're not reporting correctly. It's that they're not reporting precisely, and I'll show you a couple examples. And it's a trade-off between premium and indemnity. If you're a producer in an area that you have claims 8 out of 10 years, you probably don't want accurate acres. You probably want CLU acres because the benefit to you is somewhere between a 2 and a 7% benefit. You'll pay 2 to 7% more premium, but you'll get indemnity payments based on that same percentage. So insured acres, I mean, our experience is insured acres are going to decrease, and the average that that we've seen, the average that's talked about in the crop insurance, the SEPA meeting, everybody bounces around 6 to 7%. So it is, on average, a 6% decrease in insurable acres when you use accurate data versus CLU acres. Revenue's going to change and losses are going to be impacted. Today, I would say unknown and no direct correlations can be drawn yet, but as soon as there's enough information that allows a producer to report, as soon as there's enough producers that report precise acres, there's going to be changes that you're going to see. So it brings uncertainty to future figures and less predictability. And I'm going to show you a couple of examples so you can actually see it. So this is an actual 2013 FSA 578. And this is after a producer went into report. So you can see on what they report is corn planted May 25th. This was soybeans followed by wheat. So a producer literally goes in with and the FSA has a picture of the map. They point to a field and they write on it, and they key that in later. If you look at this particular field using precision ag data, that's the planting data, and that CLU is actually pretty close. You can see at the bottom there's an area of pink that was unplanted. Along the top edge there was an area that was unplanted, but they did plant additional field in what's called CLU 0, which is farmland but not cropland. And you can't report planting in farmland. So CLU 0, which can't be reported, has 0.54 acres planted. And then the actual reported CLU was 96.3% planted, 3.7% unplanted. So this is you've got 1.51. You can look at it and say, okay, I've got 0.54, but you're still an acre overinsured on that particular field, because for crop insurance, that entire field was reported as planted on May 25th. So that's an example that's pretty close, 3.7% decrease in premium. This is another example. You can see in the middle there's a waterway. That waterway was not paid for by the FSA, and therefore it is considered cropland. It's not farmland, even though you can't get a planter in there. So you've got this soybeans that were planted here and a large area of non-plant. And the smaller the field and the more variability, the bigger the percentages are. So that CLU is 10.35 planted, or 77%. 3.05 planted, it's 22.7%. If you look at the program, and I have left the CLU information off of here so that there's not an AIP that can go back and audit the producer. But if you look at the program, they walked into FSA and they basically said it's planted. The easiest thing to do for a producer or a crop insurance agent is take the information from the FSA and use it for reporting even though it's not accurate. I mean, that's the bottom line. That's what happens. And if you look at planting, they're over-insuring areas that they don't plant. But if you look at harvest, so if I had in that field, and I thought it was corn, so I did a corn example, so pretend that's yellow. If I planted 13, if my bushels harvested were 1,300, and I'm dividing that over 10 acres, which is the acres that were planted, it's 130 bushels an acre. It's 130 bushels if you insure the whole thing. It's 156 if you insure the area that was planted. So the numbers are, the smaller the field, the more variability. So if you're a producer in this situation and you've been reporting 130 bushels an acre and all of a sudden you're reporting accurately on actual insured land and you're at 156, you're potentially triggering compliance or other things by doing things accurately. And a number of AIPs have talked to RMA about a one-time reinstatement of yield. But that opens up the door. So what does this producer do? Does he go into the FSA and say, you know what? I've been reporting 10.3, I've been reporting 13.4 acres planted. That I only planted 10 acres for the past 10 years. It's like a producer's not going to have that discussion with the government. But that's not wrong. It's because the FSA systems can't really handle that scenario. And it's a whole lot easier to report the way that the government wants it than to report accurately. And I would say that's changing with accuracy. So this particular farm isn't in the pilot counties for accuracy, but the government this spring has 30 counties in Illinois and Iowa that they are going to allow the producer to report accurately, and that data will be shared across agencies. There's some things that are still being worked out, but that's going to change insurable acres. It's going to change yield, and it's going to create a situation where you want to think about what the data is and how it's going to be used. That's what I've got. I'm going to turn it over to Tom, who I'm sure will give you RMA's perspective on this whole thing. Sorry, Tom.
Okay. No, thank you very much. And it's very interesting to follow some of your comments. And I'm going to just speak from RMA, crop insurance point of view. The world we live in and what big data means to us, at least from the area that I work in, I would say, first of all, we've been dealing with big data for a while. And so I'll talk about it a little more, but this term big data, what does it really mean in a crop insurance context? I feel like we've been there for a while, but I would say data is getting bigger. What you have here, it's very hard to see, it's very faint, but there's in the center the Illinois and Indiana state line, and actually in the center is Iroquois County. And the reason I selected that is that our biggest crop, since it's all about big, our biggest crop is corn, and Iroquois County has the most insured acres. It's our biggest corn county, 320,000 acres in 2014. And this view, this blank view, is a view that we've been living with for a lot of the history of the crop insurance program. We just get data and we have it at a county level. We don't know where the farms are specifically. We know they're what county they're in, but that's it. So it's just sort of this vague county view, and our rating and our program is generally driven at a county level. But now things are changing, and let's see if I press the right direction. Wrong direction. This is what big data means to us, is that now we're getting some clarity some detail that we didn't see before. And what I'm showing right here is the average yield, with the darker colors being higher yield. And to me, this is very exciting. It's the first time we're seeing this kind of detail and specificity in our view of where things are and what's going on. And, you know, I mean, this is inherently interesting. It's interesting to see where are the yields higher, where are they lower. But while it's interesting, it doesn't really do a lot for you quite yet. What can you do with this? Well, once again, big data will make it bigger. And if you just sort of pan out a couple of ways, and now you see sort of a larger pattern, and you can recognize some familiar geographical features there. And now we start to see sort of a broader pattern. You can see parts of Illinois, no surprise here. You can see the really productive areas and where the yields are higher and where they're not. But once again, we look at this. How can this help us inform and improve how we operate the crop insurance program? What can we do to improve the rating, the yields, and prices and so forth? Well, another aspect of big data to us is that as we start to figure out where the crops are, where things are planted, we can now interconnect with other data sets. And an example of that here is bringing in soil data from NRCS. And now you start to see, you can see where first of all, where things are planted and where they're not planted and where the yields are higher and where they're lower. It corresponds with the soil types. And it seems the greener, which is a particular soil type, the more there's the more density there is in where things are insured and the higher the yield. And so, okay, well, you see this relationship here. Now we're getting somewhere. Does it hold in a larger area? So we've panned back even more. Here's more data. You can see that core corn growing area from Illinois, Indiana, going up into Minnesota through Iowa. And once again, relating that to soil information, it follows it all the way through. Okay, well, this is starting to tell us something. What can we do to figure out how to use this information to improve how we administer this program? And that is the boundary we're at right now. We are now getting this data and figuring out what to do next to make the premium rates better, to make the yields better. And that also brings me to the title of the presentation. I was going to call it Big Data, but Bigger Data. And one thing, when I was invited to speak, I have to say I've been using this term, I've been reading this term, but I don't know what this term means. I looked it up on the internet, put it into Google, and there was over 40 definitions. Okay, well, went back accidentally. Another thing in Google is they have something called Google Trends. I don't know if you're aware of it, but you can look and see how people have used search terms over time. And so I typed in, well, big data. When did big data emerge? Because I heard nothing about it. Suddenly it came up. You can see in December, that first circle, December of 2011, is when the term big data took off. And after that, the search for big data in Google took off. And then I put a circle. It turns out there's a dip, interestingly, at each December, December 2012, December 2013, December 2014. So whatever big data is, it takes a break around the holidays. This is really fun. You can put in all sorts of things. I'll just do one more. I know it's a digression, but crop insurance. How often do people search for crop insurance? And the search, I have a circle, and that's around each February-March timeframe, which makes sense. That's our biggest sales closing date, and that's when people search crop insurance the most. But you notice our biggest peak is over here in the summer of 2012. Well, what was going on in the summer of 2012? Yeah. And so actually, that's our biggest peak. So really, this cycle is our good year cycle, that growers think about crop insurance at sales closing date, and then if things go well, they forget about it. And then you see in 2012, they didn't forget about it. And actually in 2013, there's some loss events going on in 2013, so you see a little bit of peak there. But then in 2014, we didn't really have much way of yield events. I mean, it's been a bumper crop. Now, on the revenue side, I understand. There's some other things there, but that doesn't seem to sort of spur the searches the way a yield event does. Okay, anyway, that's a digression, but I mean, when I think of big data and Google and all of that, it turns out the big data search term, they also have a geographical location. Most of the searches came out of Silicon Valley, followed by Boston, followed by DC. So anyway, the reason why I say that we've been in big data for a while is that here's our policies earning premium going back to 1990. And it was a smaller program until 95 when crop insurance was linked to ad hoc disaster assistance. That brought a lot of people in quite the marketing plan. And then that requirement was taken away, but we've reached a steady state of around 1.2 million policies. And roughly on average, there's around two policies per grower. So that's around 600,000 growers. 600,000 growers over at least 20 years. You know, once again, that is big data, and that's what we've been working with for some time. So if I had to define big data, there's two aspects. One is efficiency. Part of the reason big data is there is that you can now more easily, more cheaply gather this information and store it and use it than ever before. And it also brings up, Deb brought up, access and security, and I'll touch on that. And then also the part that I enjoy more and is part of big data is now you have this information, how do you get the maximum benefit from that information? And included in that is not just the amount of data, but also combining different types of data. So on the efficiency front, one point that Deb brought up is access to data. I know sometimes I worry when I download an app on my iPhone that could there be a passive grabbing of information? Do I have control, or am I now being tracked without my knowledge? And one of the definitions of, yeah, it does kind of move on its own. One of the definitions I saw in big data is the transformation of individuals from users of data to creators of data. And that is, once again, I was not touching it, just like. So from crop insurance, our perspective has been and continues to be is what information do we need to administer the program? And then we obtain that information, and that's it. And so from our perspective, the precision ag information and so forth, that opens up a lot of new information. But that doesn't necessarily mean we need to go out and just grab it for the sake of grabbing it. But another aspect of this is that it's not just that there's more information, but it can be transmitted much more cheaply. And so really our focus has been much more not on trying to get more data because, I mean, we're collecting generally what we need. It's really more on how can we get this data more efficiently, more cheaply for everyone involved. You know, first of all, as was mentioned, SIMS and then accuracy, one-stop reporting for the grower. Why do they have to report the same number multiple times to multiple agencies? Can we have a single reporting and make it easier for the grower and for the insurance companies? And then also with the precision agricultural equipment, is there a way to transmit this data in a much more efficient manner? And so there have been initiatives to for loss adjustment and the yield monitors. How can we use yield monitors for loss adjustment? And how can that be used in a way to enhance the productivity of a loss adjuster? If they have the monitor, they've met the standards on calibrating, well then the loss adjuster can go there, check the equipment, take the reading, you're gone. That's cheaper for the grower, it's cheaper for the company. So really, my view is with big data is more about efficiency and delivering the program at a lower cost. And then finally, with data mining, it actually bridges somewhere between efficiency and analysis. We only have so many resources to check out what's going on out there, and so how do you allocate those resources to where they're most likely to find where there may be problems? And so you're all familiar with the spot checklist and looking for anomalous data readings, seeing an atypical pattern, and then that's where we focus limited resources. And, of course, access and security, these are familiar issues. We've been gathering a lot of very specific information on individuals for a long time, and so a number of laws have been passed, Privacy Act and also in the Crop Insurance Act. Was it 502C that require that we cannot disclose individual data? You know, just like when I use my credit card, I suspect Citibank sells my information to other people, whatever, and I have no control over it, or they give something this long and I sign it and I guess I gave permission. No. We cannot give this information out to the public, period. And then all of you are familiar with the non-disclosure statements and the requirements, not just us, it's not just the companies, it passes all the way down to the agent. And however, one exception is at an aggregate level. We can communicate information at an aggregate level, and most of you are familiar with our summary of business. And one thing about big data is that everyone's hungrier and hungrier for grabbing data and merging the sets and trying to get to these new insights. the requests we're getting for crop insurance data increase. It used to be an occasional request, now virtually weekly. Some researcher, some grad student working on their PhD, some interest group, I mean, just everyone's asking, they want this data. And so we've been working to enhance our summary of business reporting, and we have a beta version out there. I don't know if all of you have seen it, but if so, please take a look. But we're trying to make it more flexible. For example, we hadn't been reporting according to unit type, enterprise versus optional and so forth. Well, now that'll be in this new version, and hopefully that will help meet the needs or interest that's out there. But we cannot go down to an individual level, which a lot of people, that's what they're really after. So, and then I'm moving into now analysis, and one place where we have started using our own data in a new and different way is with Cotton, with SEO, and Stacks. This is actually a big change for us. Before, with area-based programs, we've relied on NAST data. Here, for the first time, we are using crop insurance data to run this program. And this line just shows the relationship between NAST and RMA yield data. And if the closer they line up on that 45-degree line, the more they're the same. The more they vary away from that line, the more they're different. But you see that they're mostly the same. A few variations here and there, and that's to be expected because we have two different methods of collecting data, but it shows that there's an equivalence. But the data we collect has a lot more specificity by practice and also allows us to do some analysis on how to group counties together, and that was a big challenge with Cotton because Stacks is their main program. They don't have ARC, they don't have PLC, and so we're trying to figure out how do you get Stacks out to basically all of the counties where we offer crop insurance. But there's this adage, and that is group-based coverage. It's hard to offer group-based coverage when there's not a group. And so we've had to look at ways to bring together groups of counties, but there's so many counties out there and so many different permutations of how to combine them. How do you figure this out? Well, once again, this is where we brought in other data. There's something called a productivity index, and this is the productivity index related to cotton. And we started using that information, brought it into, we had to sort of pixelate it into a county level. And then looking at that, for example, in Kansas, we offer cotton coverage there, but not much cotton is grown. Very little information. We have to group those counties together. Question is, how do you group them together? What makes the most sense? Well, you start looking at the productivity index, and you start to see what counties relate to each other, what makes sense. So that is an example of where we've been starting to put into action this aspect of big data. Another aspect is, once again, this is a chart we publish on our website, and it shows losses for 2013. And look at Iowa. We've been trapped at the county level, and that's the loss in Iowa, and it's just a big smudge. It doesn't tell you much. I'm going to lose control again. I'm sorry. But over here, this is losses reported now by specific area, and it gives you a much clearer picture. Where are the losses happening? And why do we care about that? Well, here's the yield curve. It's our main risk classification system. And it's actually based upon big data that we've had all along. We've looked across hundreds and thousands or millions at this point of observations, and it turns out producers who are a bit more productive than average are lower risk and vice versa. And it's a relationship that is robust, it holds, it's there, and that's why we adjust premium rates according to this. But you know what? We don't know the exact reason for this curve. Now, I suspect it has to do with more productive growers tend to be earlier adopters of new technology, more conscientious. Also, it could simply capture just inherent variation across a county. One corner of a county has poor soil, another corner has better soil. There's a number of factors, but this is a very general approach. And part of the crudeness is shown, this is the loss ratios for the past several years on the commercial fund versus the assigned risk fund. And obviously the assigned risk fund, the risk is given to, most of it, to the government, where with commercial fund, most of the risk is retained by companies. And you can see that, as expected, the average loss ratio for assigned risk is higher than for commercial. And that's a signal to us. That means that companies and are seeing some risk and some variation that we're not really capturing, even with our risk classification, our yield curve. Another way to look at it, and this is sort of one of my more wonkier charts, but this is if you line up all the counties according to percent of premium in assigned risk, this is how it lines up. For example, for corn, about 60% of corn has no premium in assigned risk, 60% of the counties. And then when you go from 60 to, it's about 90%, that 30% layer, you see that there are counties where there's a proportion of premium in assigned risk and a proportion in commercial. That tells me that there's something at the sub-county level that companies are picking up on, that there's something different about the risk. And you see that also with soybeans and cotton and wheat. And so that means there's room for improvement of how we do premium rates. And now that we're getting this more specific view of our business, and not just at the county level, this gives us an opportunity to improve what we do. And so these are just now, what I'd say is more just sort of looking ahead. We're working on the questions to ask even. We now have GIS specialists on our staff, strengthening in spatial statistics, and we're learning how to take good advantage of this information. But these are losses for 10, 11, and 12 in Iowa, and looking for patterns. This is a kernel smoothing approach. And then also, just looking at individual counties, can you find patterns? This is a particular county where blue is soybeans, green is corn, and there's a few yellow spots for wheat. No particular pattern, but then when you look at corn, and once again, where the darker colors are, the higher yields, you can see there's an area where there tends to be a bit more of a concentration of higher yields. Bounce that against the soil types, there's that relationship again. Is there something in there that we can use to help fine-tune the rates? And then one more thing that we look at is then, well, where's the assigned risk in that county? Is there a pattern to the assigned risk? That can tell us something too. And here, assigned risk tends to happen more where there's those rivers and the flood areas. Makes sense. And if I had to express where we want to go in just one sort of phrase, and that is what I'd like to be able to do is have a map of the United States up on the screen, and that we can poke a virtual pin on that map and then know everything that's happened in the crop insurance program on that piece of land. And so that means with APH and how we store information, these are one-year snapshots. That doesn't tell us a whole lot. Risk is about change through time. How much does your yield vary according to an average? And that's what we're working on also with some APH initiatives, is how to build up a database that is geographically specific but also through time. And then final, Brandon had discussed the participation in SCO winter wheat. This is the percent of policies sold for winter wheat that have SCO on there, and it varies. The darker blue is the range is 28 to 41%, and then the yellows are zero. And Brandon talked about that pattern, but the reason I bring this up partly is just kind of interesting to see how that's unfolding. Preliminary still, where we haven't heard back from all the folks who may have pulled out, but is that with GIS and communication, we're working more on maps and visually oriented ways to help growers understand how the program works, what's out there. And so, you know, check out our website. We're trying to put out more interesting information. So with that, I'll hand it off to Bev.
Thanks, Tom. Uh-huh. That's my turn with this little, this guy.
Gotcha. Right there.
Hi, everybody. I have to say this is one of the first panels I've ever served on where my material doesn't repeat anything of what they already just said, so we'll see. This is an interesting issue. I was thinking back to my first introductions to working on data and precision data and how it's all going to come together with crop insurance, and that was really introduced to me by John Deere a few years ago when they had, you know, their dreams about how they were going to incorporate all of the data they were collecting off of their equipment and make a seamless transition to crop insurance. And now, of course, they're out of the industry altogether. So it's an industry that's changing quickly. Is it on? Okay. It's an industry that's changing quickly, one maybe more quickly than our farmers are comfortable with. So my focus today is going to be talking about the perspective from soybean farmers, at least, as to what their interests are, what their concerns are, what their thoughts are about ag data going forward. So here's a chart that somebody in our St. Louis office sent to me. And I think it's so aspirational. And this is the sort of thing that you see out of companies about, oh, see, this is where we're going. You know, you're going to have all of your equipment, and it's all going to be linked to each other and to your farm office and to your dealers down here and your crop insurance agent. And I think farmers look at this and think, what in the world? But this is the sort of thing that I think the industry thinks this is where we're going. I'm not sure how quickly we're going there. For farmers, these are the sorts of things they're talking about way back at the beginning. Who owns my data? Who's going to use my data? How secure is my data? And I think, you know, we just saw again just in the last couple of days another great big data breach within the health insurance industry. So these issues are pressing. And of course, for them, they're their livelihoods. So these are some of the kind of questions that we've been talking about. And the big one always is, who owns the data? We at the American Soybean Association, in conjunction with the group really led by the Farm Bureau, that's been a collaborative effort among the big farm groups and a lot of the larger ag tech providers, have worked through a lot of these questions. And the interesting thing about it is, you know, nothing is black and white. Every issue that you think has a black and white answer just doesn't, starting with the very basic one, who owns it? Well, the farmer thinks he owns it. He thinks he can take it back whenever he wants. Thinks he can give it just to who he wants. It's not like that at all in reality. So the sorts of things we've been talking about is who has the access. Farmers want to know if they change from one company to another, if they switch whoever they're doing business with, can they get their data back? And to them, that again seems like a black and white issue. Yes, if I gave it to you, you have to give it back. You have to take it out of your database. Well, of course, if that's, are you laughing, Mary Kay? they're not black and white. If it's been aggregated in any way, you know, you'll never get it back. Are they comfortable with that? They are not comfortable with that yet, not at all. Data is valuable. This is another one of the core questions. You know, farmers want to know, if my data is so valuable, if your company is going to make a $1 billion bet on the value of this, aren't you going to pay me? How come you want me to pay you? You should be paying me. And that's just a fundamental question. And frankly, I think it's making the adoption of some of these technologies slower than it should be because of these questions about who ought to be paying who. Is the usage agreement clear and concise? We all laugh at this. How many times have we downloaded an app and you just click, yes, I agree, and you don't read it? That's one of the things that we've really talked a lot about in this collaborative effort that we've worked on these data principles is, can you get to a one-page contract? Can you get to a one-page description that everybody will sign off on, that all companies will use, that is clear to farmers? The answer so far definitely is no. And then what's the potential of the data being used to manipulate markets? This is something that farmers bring up that they talk about. And we have a couple of farmers who are early adopters on this kind of technology who say, look, we've got laws against this sort of thing. I mean, the manipulating markets with data that you collect, that's against the law. You know, we don't need to go any further than that. But this remains a very clear concern for many farmers. I have to say, this thing works great now, by the way. Privacy. Is sensitive information protected? And then the second question about, is the ag tech provider going to state if they'll share the data with a third party? And again, we've already had reference to, you know, we're all involved in all sorts of business transactions every day where somebody is keeping track of what we're doing, our grocery store, and selling it to somebody else. And we've all maybe signed off on that, or maybe we haven't, but farmers are very, very touchy about this issue. I think also we have seen already in this space a lot of consolidation and merging of companies. So one of the questions that we've talked about quite a bit, and again, that is very gray, not black and white, is, so what happens if the company that you've got a contract with is sold to another one? Do the terms of your contract apply to that sale? we feel very strongly that they should. And then security, of course. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about this one. I think you have to hope that everybody's going to do their best. I think we see every single day that mistakes are made. So I've alluded to this all along, the privacy and security principles for farm data that we have worked on very collaboratively. We are continuing to ask other ag tech providers, other farm groups, to sign on to this document. I think at the beginning, did we have 14, Mary Kay? 12. And now we're up to 24. The National Barley Growers just joined the document this week. And so that's a very specific list of questions designed to try to get to a collaborative approach on the issues that we who represent farmers bring to the table, and you know where the industry is on trying to build trust and goodwill. So here are all of the different items that we worked through. And I have copies of the principles document with me for anybody who wants to see them. They're available online. But these are all of the issues that farmers are worrying about. So our next steps, of course, you know, now that we've got kind of a tentative agreement in hand of how to work together on security, on privacy, farmer education is a big one. I do think that we have a little more time than we thought we did now that crop prices are decreasing. I don't think this industry is going to take off quite as quickly as we maybe thought a year ago. So we are very interested in working together to develop joint educational materials that we can all use, that can be used at our meetings, the meetings that go on every winter, that can be put on everybody's websites, trying to educate farmers just about these very gray questions of who controls what. I'll give you an example. Just this term ag tech provider. You know, you think you know what that means, right? It means that you've got a contract with Pioneer, and you're going to give them your data, and then they're going to give you a prescription, and they're going to tell you what to do differently. But who is your ag tech provider? So you've got the machine data from your own machines, but what about when you contract with your local co-op and they're spraying one of your crops, and then they're also spraying your neighbor's crop, and they've got all that equipment on their machines too. So they're also your ag tech provider. But did you have this conversation with them about what are they going to do with it and who are they going to share it with and are they going to aggregate it? And the answer is no. No, I didn't think of them in that way. So this whole question of who is an ag tech provider, it's got a really long tail. There's a really big group of ag tech providers out there. It's not just six or eight big ones. It's going to be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. A transparency scorecard. Our friends at Farm Bureau have really taken the lead on this, I think, because our working group has gotten a little bogged down on this topic. But one of the things that the farm groups at the table in particular have been very interested in is kind of a standard way to measure the products that are being offered to them. And again, we've talked about, can you get to a simple one-page contract? Maybe not. Okay, so can you get to a standard list of questions of, does this contract do this? Do they provide for, you know, notification of a data breach? Do they provide for the same contract terms if their product is sold to another company? Do they do A, B, C, D, E, and F? And so that's the sort of thing that we're still working on that we think will be of great help to individual farmers. And then, like I said, continued outreach on the principles document. For those of you who are interested in learning more about this topic and who are on the winter meeting schedule, there are a couple of things coming up that some of our growers are going to be participating in that are open to any of you. One is a big data workshop coming up in Ohio just in a few days. This is the second one of these that they've done, and our growers who attended the first one said it was very valuable. The second at Commodity Classic at the end of the month, I know many of you will be there. We've got a learning center session on these issues that we anticipate will be very well attended by farmers. So having had no problems with the clicker, thank you, and we'll look forward to your questions.
So I was hoping that first and foremost we could give a round of applause to all of our
And if it's okay, I'll kick off with a question, but I'm hoping this is going to become much more interactive with y'all after I ask the first question. I'm hoping you're going to make my moderating job as easy as possible up here. We talked about this a little bit this morning at breakfast. All three of us sat down, and just about, a week ago, NASA actually launched a new satellite. And in the press release, NASA talked about measuring soil moisture with this new satellite, and that they were specifically going to use it to track crop yields. And so I guess my question to this panel, to Tom specifically, is that the kind of data that RMA would want to use to help with the rating process or to track fraud? Bev, do you consider NASA an ag tech provider? Would that fit within the principles that you guys have laid out? What are y'all's thoughts on that?
Okay. I'm not aware of the details of the latest satellite going up, but what just with satellite data in general is that, okay, you have remote sensing, and the remote sensing is a way to try and figure out what might be happening on the ground. But then what we actually have are growers producing, say, their grain elevator receipts. And then we find out exactly what's happening on the ground. So you have satellite data on the one hand and grain elevator receipts on the other. I think we have, you know, very precise readings. And so when I hear about satellite data, I guess another way of putting it is that I don't know that it's a substitute. I think we have very good data on what is being produced. And I don't know if satellite data improves that. And then for example, for compliance, we will look at what is reported to us. And I don't know the satellite brings anything necessarily new because the participation is at such a high level. To me, what it looks like the satellite may do is let you know at an earlier point in time that the yields are evolving or there's a drought developing. But from our point of view, we'll wait for the losses and then pay. And another thing in terms of rating is that we pay according to what the grower actually reports. We don't pay according to what a satellite tells us. And so the rating has to be driven by what's actually reported. So I don't see a direct rating impact of the satellite data.
Well, I guess I'd say that, you know, I think this issue is a little bit of the balance between how do you want to look at this issue. And in working with farmers, this is always the balance that we're trying to strike. We've got, of course, an industry and many farmers who see big data as opportunity, as a way to improve efficiencies, as a way to make more money. And then we have another group, and it's a substantial group, that sees it as intrusive. And so we constantly are trying to balance those two different viewpoints. And hopefully someday we'll just get to one. But I you know, Tom says it's just another piece of data. I think for any farmer now who doesn't understand that you can look at the disease on a tomato leaf like you showed in your slide, anybody who doesn't understand that sort of data is being collected with or without their consent, it's a different world than it used to be. Mm-hmm. I think many people are not comfortable with that, but that's the reality.
Do we have any questions from the audience?
What do you say, stand up?
I'll turn it off. Well done. maybe a question here for Tom. The SRA is clearly restrictive about what can be done with data collected for the program, and yet you've got a lot of companies collecting the same data from the same sources for multiple purposes. So how do you see that being reconciled in terms of RMA's role to protect the data versus what the companies are trying to do at the same time with the same data?
I'm not sure if I entirely follow the question. Is this with accuracy or?
Just thinking in terms of the data that's collected, the SRA says can only be used for the program. But right. Yet you have companies out there collecting that same data for multiple purposes. So Is that clause, I guess, in the SRA basically unenforceable at this point, the way data is being used, or do you think it still has some meat?
Well, that's getting into a legal question that I'm not a lawyer, but what I'll say is with accuracy and others, I mean, multiple USDA programs have need of the same data. And so there has been a general focus on trying to not have to report multiple times. And so that means that, you know, crop insurance agents can get information from FSA, but then FSA can eventually, if it's needed for a program, like number of acres, that it can come from, they can get information that was collected by agents. So I'd view as a program efficiency both directions.
Is your question, though, for people using USDA data for non-program purposes, for private products or for other services?
Yes, exactly. Okay. I see some other people nodding their head yes, like
that's
they think that's the question.
So that data is being collected for RMA, but then it's being used for private purposes?
Yes.
Individual level data?
Yes.
And this gets back at the Section 1619 issue mm-hmm. that we also sort of discussed this morning, that there were supposed to be some protections in the 2008 Farm Bill to help prevent this ability to share data unless it's in aggregate form and unless it's for program purposes.
You know, just to follow up on that, Tara, another of the issues that we talked a lot about is this issue of standardizing data and being able to collect and move people's data around and potentially, you know, file Freedom of Information Act requests about it. And back to the issue of, you know, what's black and white and what's not, you know, it seems very clear that everybody ought to have their data in the same form, and so it's portable and you can move from provider to provider. You know, it's like VHS machines, you know, once upon a time. But then one of the points that was brought up was, you know, look, if you're worried about people being able to collect your data by FOIA, you don't want it all to look exactly the same. It's much harder to do anything with data if it's in a bunch, it's in all different formats. But if it's all in one standardized thing, it's a lot easier for somebody to get their hands on that data and do something with it that you'd rather they didn't.
Well, that also sort of begs the question, you talked about ag tech providers, and what's the definition of an ag tech provider? Is the federal government considered an ag tech provider under the principles that these grower groups have put forward?
No. But that said, they're not so punitive that anybody who wants to do business with farmers shouldn't be willing to sign on to them.
Is this on?
Yeah, excellent. I think this is a question for Deb. Interestingly, there was an article yesterday in Wired Magazine about open data on the farm, right? So the basic idea was the frustration, the storyline of the article was the frustration farmers have because they have paid big money for a piece of equipment with lots of technology on it, and they own it, but they don't own the data, they don't have legal rights to open up the black box and fix or alter what goes on the system, and they don't even feel like they own the data, that, you know, Deere or their provider or whoever else it is owns the data, and all they are is a drone collecting data for companies, right? And their frustration and the nature of the article is sort of a inkling towards, we've got hobby electronics, we've got 3D printers, maybe there should be a push towards an open platform, kind of, you know, this is where the original articulated four-wheel drive Steiger tractor came from, right? Farmers built that for farmers, and that's later was bought and put in production by the companies. Well, is there going to be, or have you seen any inklings of this, of an open data sort of groundswell with farmers? And I think Deb would be the first one to see this, right? Because you all would see different formats of data coming into your system that aren't from the big companies. Have you seen any of that sprinkling up?
Not farmer, not pushed by farmers. There are two different standardization sort of bodies out there. There's the Open Ag Data Alliance, that's out there trying to standardize the transactions that occur on the farm. And then Ag Gateway is another organization of about 200, call them ATPs, that are also working to standardize it so that you can get information off of the can, which is what's sitting on the tractor, and are able to use it for different things. Because manufacturers do believe they own and control the data on the can. They do create, I mean, there are monitors, though, on every tractor that allow the farmer to get the data, or not on every tractor, but if you've got a can bus and you've got any kind of control, you can get the data that the manufacturers want to make publicly available off of the, via a data card or via the equipment manufacturer clouds. So you can get the data, it's just not all the data, and the proprietary machine data isn't something manufacturers are going to release anytime soon. But there are a couple standards organizations. The belief is they'll be 2 to 10 years out for adoption because of the changes that have to occur in the equipment to be able to get done what needs to get done. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's really helpful. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions from the audience? We've got one more here, and then we're probably about ready to move on to the next session after this one. So,
I'm just wondering if it's really realistic to expect farmers to be able to control this data as it grows and becomes much more useful and also just everywhere. I mean, look at social media, Facebook, et cetera. I mean, keeping up with your own personal control and information just in your own life is a full-time job sometimes. Yeah. How are these people supposed to be doing it with their machinery and all of their business information that gets collected over 5, 10, 20 years?
Bev, is that their expectation?
Yeah, it's too big. It's too much. It's too much, you know, and obviously that's what all these private companies think they're going to do for you. and we'll see if farmers feel that way. And, you know, I have a group of farmers that I talk to about this, and, you know, I would say that right now they feel like what I know in my head is more valuable than what is coming out of that machine. So I think the challenge in the industry is to convince them otherwise.
Do you see any sort of generational differences when you talk to farmers about this issue?
Well, I don't talk to that many farmers who are not of an older generation, to be perfectly honest.
Touché.
You know, that's who participates in big farm groups.
Fair enough.
But I think we all feel like, yes, of course. You know,
if I could add to that, if you look at, you know, the data, Tom, what you talked about is the historical production history is all in the insurance policy. You've got your scale tickets, you've got other things, and that's data that RMA protects. But if a drone flies over a set of fields, someone else, whoever that is going to have information on the actual production of an actual field or set of fields in the county, which is very different. And how does a farmer control that information? It's not RMA releasing it. RMA isn't releasing it. The program's not based on it, but you can get to yield by field in a couple of different ways. One is scale tickets. The other is grain cart. A third is your satellite imagery or your drones. I mean, there are formulas or algorithms out there, and the Canadian government is much more progressive in their use of satellite imagery to pay crop hail claims. I mean, they've had that automated for 3, 4, 5 years, and they're very good at it, but the information is public. So it's a different world, and I don't think the farmer's going to be able to control the data collected from the satellite, and farmers are even going to be charged to get it.
With that, we are out of time. If we can thank our panelists again, I know some of them are going to be here for a little while.
Wow, was it something I said? I don't have this gentleman.